The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, joined once again by my esteemed deputy editor, John Dixon. John, March Madness has been wild in the actual March Madness, but
yeah,
no March Madness for the Chiefs in the NFL, it seems.
Well, that's just what we need to get used to, you know. They're not going to have a lot of money to spend, well, as long as Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback. So we enjoy that and just take what we get in free agency because that's the way it's going to be.
Tom Childs, our wonderful Arrow Headlines editor, roots for the wrong English Premier League soccer team, got into our DMs yesterday and he said, is it all right to call this offseason boring on Arrow Headlines? Yes, Tom, that's fine. So it's true. When you're picking 31, thanks to the criminal Dolphins, instead of 32, and you are having a lot of money tied up, you got to be very selective. I know that Brett Veach has used this term in the past of being selectively aggressive, which has really become a theme for, I think, this strategy that we have seen from them now to manage the cap with Patrick Mahomes. That's something we'll talk about today. We'll of course do our news roundup. I know that Jared had a key piece that we're going to discuss in the second half of this thing, but it really is one of these things where you got to hurry up and wait in a sense for any kind of move for the Chiefs to happen. And again, that'll be probably the theme of today's show. We do have one review and we actually have two. We talked about one of them off air. You can go look at the one star review if you are so inclined, but we did get a 5-star review in, and it's from Cody in Indiana. We'll start there before we get into what is the Chiefs news. Here's Cody. I'm a moment on his soapbox, and this is a long review, but we're gonna get through it.
Oh well,
I remember very well Halloween of 1993. I was a 5-year-old trick or treating at Osage Beach Outlets, dressed as Joe Montana. I relish the compliments I would not have otherwise received back home in Indiana for my costume. Outside of my family, the Chiefs were a big reason I loved visiting family in Missouri. I still have that Montana jersey, amongst many others acquired over the years. Then to wait faithfully nearly another 30 years, I'll forever cherish moments like calling my grandma after winning Super Bowl 54 to share the victory, or experiencing Arrowhead Stadium alongside my grandpa. For many of us, that's a big part of what it's all about to be a fanatic of a professional sports franchise. My fandom has only grown since 93, and as a diehard member of Chiefs Kingdom outside of the Missouri area, it's refreshing to have access to quality Chiefs content. Thank you, AP, for the quality content your team consistently puts out, both in-season and off-season, and for all the hard work behind the scenes that goes into making it all happen. For me, free agency and the draft are just as entertaining as the regular season with the help of AP. You guys are amongst the best at what you do and one of my go-tos for content. So, Pete and John, the AP Editor Show is so well done. I look forward to every episode. In Veach, we trust. Go Chiefs. Now, when I first started reading this review, you know, when you say soapbox, you think you're in for a rant of some sort.
Yeah.
This was all sunshine and rainbows to me, John.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. That's my response to that. That's very kind. Those are all very kind words, which we appreciate. We don't always get those.
A 5-year-old in 93, that means you were born like myself in 1988, which I don't know if you knew this, John, but in the Chinese New Year, that's the year of the dragon. So, you know, keep that in mind. I was born on the year of the dragon. I'm not sure what yours was, but that's what mine was.
Yeah, I don't know. The year of the sloth or something. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. You're going to compare yourself to Demetrius Harris? Remember that Andy Reid used to call him the sloth?
Oh, my. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah.
That is a Chiefs nickname of yesteryear at this stage. All right. Enough of the sloth. Enough of Chinese New Year. Let's get into what's going on with the Kansas City Chiefs. Truth of the matter is, not a whole lot at this stage. I know that some fans are getting antsy. And that's understandable. There's only so much room against the cap. We're going to get into a bigger cap discussion again after the break. But let's start here. Mecole Hardman, John, says goodbye to the Kansas City Chiefs. Hello to the New York Jets. What was your initial reaction to that?
Well, I was a little surprised, but not a lot surprised. I mean, I know people had, you know, Hardman's been kind of an odd topic for Chiefs fans ever since he was drafted, because he was largely seen as a guy to back up Tyreek Hill because he was drafted at the moment Hill was having all these off the field problems, and he never really established among fans an identity of his own. Maybe that's not fair. It might be that we didn't cut him enough slack for the situation that he was in. And I think that this is one of those cases we often talk about players who are worth more to the Chiefs than they are to other teams. I think in this case, we're talking about a player who is worth more to other teams than he was to the Chiefs. Certainly true with regard to the fan base and maybe with regard to the people running the team as well. And this is the way it's played out.
Yeah. I pulled up the contract that the New York Jets gave him. It states 1 year for $4.5 million. I know that it can get up as high as $6.5 million. That was reported by Ian Rappaport. The Jets did build in voidable years. So the cap hit for this year is 1.8, 2.4 for next year, and then 600,000 thereafter. I know that gets into the realm of dead cap. John, we've talked about this before. This is a strategy where other teams have done it, the voided years that don't really count.
Yeah.
And Kansas City has chosen generally not to. I can't even recall one, right? We can't recall one where they build in voidable years, or have they done it?
We had that for, I think it was Alex Okafor had a void year.
But it was very seldom.
Right. Yeah. And we certainly haven't seen an example where they have put, you know, three or four void years at the end of the contract in order to spread out a fairly large signing bonus, which is the way it's typically used by other teams. We haven't seen the Chiefs do that at all. It was just kind of like a little aside thing on Okafor's contract. That's the only one I remember off the top of my head.
I think that the general feeling I get when I see the deal and see the cap hit is that it probably would have been manageable for the Chiefs, but I think they, it's one of these hard things that they're never going to say out loud, right? But you can read between the lines. I think they probably said to themselves, we're not interested in Hardman, or maybe they were interested in matching and Hardman wanted to go elsewhere to try to continue to build upon his career and have a different role. And I know that in a way, you know, if he wants to be one of these true receivers, a true number two receiver, he's pigeonholed in a way in Kansas City. I think Andy Reid had a very particular role for him in mind, and maybe it just wasn't a match. Sometimes we don't get that in the public press conferences.
You know, in a way it's very similar to Eric Bieniemy's situation.
Yeah.
He needed to find a place where he could exist on his own outside of the shadow of someone else, which has always been the case in San, and it would continue to be the case here in Kansas City, because the other person isn't another wide receiver. It's Travis Kelce. You know, that's the problem that he's really facing, is that Travis Kelce is the star of the receiving corps in Kansas City. So he needs to go someplace where that isn't the case in order to, you know, really have a legitimate shot to be the team's main weapon. So in that respect, it's very much like Eric Bieniemy. And
I think you're right to an extent. And more for me in what you just said about the pass catchers around him here in Kansas City. And I guess in a way it is like Bieniemy, but to me, that's a great point, because on several occasions when he was a member of the Chiefs, he looked, this was the Zoom era, he looked the Zoom camera in the eye, or he explained via press conference and said, I'm behind Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I don't know what you guys want from me. And I think maybe to an extent he did feel the shadow. And I know a lot of times we're like, well, you know, you win a Super Bowl, you want to stay with that team. And I think that's only true if you have a significant role, because I think for some players, they say, like a Juju, and maybe we missed this in evaluating heading into the offseason, but maybe like a Juju, they say to themselves, well, I got my ring. Let me go get my mom.
Right. Yeah, or, right.
You know, McColl says, I got two rings. Let me go finally try to get 1,000 yards for once in my life, you know? And so maybe that kind of played into it. But the money was so low that you just think for one reason or another, one side or another, or both sides simply said, okay, there was mutual disinterest. And I think that's my grand takeaway. And McColl Hardman had a lot of nice things to say. I said thank you to Clark Hunt, Coach Reed, the Chiefs organization, the Super Bowls. And he thanked his teammates, Pat Travis, Chris Jones, among others. So good luck to McColl Hardman. It's always a little bit tougher, I think, for fans to root for another player or a former player that is staying in the AFC. It's always nice to see those guys go to the NFC, like in the case of Eric Bieniemy and the impending new ownership, but we'll see. And McColl Hardman will have an opportunity to play the Chiefs. Chiefs visit New York. I for years have thought we would get Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. I'm not. Something weird's going to happen where they don't face off again. I just know. I don't know if we're going to get Zach Wilson, Patrick Mahomes for that game. But yes, McColl Hardman should be participating against Kansas City in New Jersey. Let's be very clear about that. Andy Reid actually had some concrete words to say, more so about Sky Moore and less about Odell Beckham Jr. in his interview catch-up at the spring meeting with Steve Wyche. Here's what Reid said. We're expecting Sky Moore to step up. We'll just see how everything else works. We got the same guys coming back that we had, and we like that group with the exception of Juju. McColl was banged up a little bit, so he didn't have a chance to play as much as he would have wanted. We'll work out the thing without Juju. Somebody will have to step up and take that spot. Asked specifically about Odell, who was spotted in Phoenix. Odell's a good football player. He does a nice job, so we'll see how that goes. Par for the course for Andy Reid, not really giving you too much on Odell. I maintain that I think the Chiefs are interested in Odell, but it comes with the caveat, the asterisk at their price.
Right.
And the longer this thing goes, I just wonder if they're going to just get outbid, because you know, for better or for worse, this is what the Chiefs have established. Now they ain't overpaying anymore for anybody. You know, once you trade Tyreek Hill, you establish, we have a price in mind, you know, whether that be a smallest deal as McColl Hardman could have been 1.8 or whatever against the cap, or as big as they wanted to give Tyreek Hill, which was right on the edge of the top of the market, not getting there quite the whole way. And they said, we're sticking to that, and you know, we'll move on if you're not. And so I think that's going to be the case with Odell. And I think the longer this goes, they may get outbid here. You know, we'll see about that. But one player we do know is going to be here, John, is Sky Moore. And Andy Reid saying the obvious, this is going to be a big year for Sky Moore, who suddenly has this grand opportunity, you know, at this stage, with a very slim wide receiver room for the Chiefs.
Yeah, he hasn't really had a whole lot of snaps in the Chiefs offense in his rookie season. So I think it may be a little unfair to put too much of a characterization on him based on that. And of course, he got dealt a pretty bad hand by having to do punt returns in a situation where he hadn't really done that before. So, and then he didn't do well and, you know, came to be a big problem for him and for Dave Tobe over the course of the 2022 season. So kind of an unfortunate set of circumstances for him, but I think that those snaps will be available in 2023 and we'll just have to see what he can do with that additional work. He certainly has, you know, in certain spots shown the ability to be a really good player. And I think there's reason to be optimistic about him.
Yeah, I think he did flash. The releases off the line are pretty impressive. And you know, I go back to this point when you look into this season, and you know, I understand where you have a lot of unproven guys. You know, when you look at the wide receiver room right now, it's Marquez Valdes-Scantling, you have Kadarius Toney, and then you have Sky Moore. And I you know, just think about last year, and I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of what were we thinking going into the season. Man, it was the same thing. It was Marquez Valdes-Scantling, McColl Hardman, and Juju Smith-Schuster. Smith-Schuster coming off that injury-filled year. The only time he had really had an outstanding season, he was the number two receiver across from Antonio Brown. Marquez Valdez-Scantling had come here wanting a bigger role than he had in Green Bay, where he was looked at as this guy who could only extend the field. And then Mecole Hardman, I think, was finally looking at it as a year where he could come out of the woodwork. I mean, isn't that same type of thing for Marquez Valdez-Scantling? Like, you look at Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney is probably more of a fit for the Juju role, where he is injured his whole year, his whole career. He finally wants to put together this healthy year where he can stand out. The Chiefs see him as a number one wide receiver. And then you have Sky Moore, who in a way is in that Hardman role where he was waiting for it to open up a little bit for him. And it's just three unproven guys. It's a very similar thing. I guess if you want to say Smith-Schuster is a bigger name, because he did have the 1,000-yard season, 1,400-yard season next to Antonio Brown. Yes, he had certainly done it before, but it's the same theme to me in a way. And I think they will add another receiver here. So it's a little bit of a let's breathe a little bit. And I think by the time this gets to training camp, it's going to have a very similar feeling to last year heading into it.
But there will be another player or two in that mix.
Yeah.
I don't think this is, you know, I don't think we've come to the end of the road. I think there's a good chance Justin Watson could come back.
Yeah, where's
back.
My guy Watson? Why is he not signed yet? Let's get him back on board.
Well, I think they want to see what else is out there before they finally add him, because they can always sign him. I don't think there's going to be a big clamoring to get Justin Watson on another team. So they can afford to wait and see if there's, you know, a better way that they can go. They can always sign him later. And there's, you know, people talk about, oh, there's no wide receivers left. No, there's about 20 guys on the market who could do a job for the Chiefs and maybe do pretty well for the Chiefs. It's just that they aren't big names that are going to get people excited. And the very people like Justin Watson last year, you know, this was a guy who had only been a special teams player in Tampa Bay. And it was like, when he was signed, people were most like, who, huh? What, you know? And then he turned out to be not a fantastic wide receiver, but he came up with some good plays and some key moments, which is just the kind of thing you want to see from that kind of player.
I had been interested in DJ Shark, and I was optimistic about maybe what the Chiefs could get him for. And he ends up going to the Carolina Panthers on a 1 year, $5 million deal. That had built-in voidable years to it as well, right? I mean, I think that is something worth exploring, like why the Chiefs are so averse to doing these voidable year deals. Because you look at the cap hit for Shark, for example, it goes to the Panthers, 1.8 for this year, according to SpotRack, 3.1 for next year. But again, and this goes into it, right? We're looking for the obvious. I would love to do it in more detail. But, you know, now you are having 3.1 against your 2024 cap with no player to show for it, because it's an avoidable year. So that's kind of, you know, what goes into it. Andy Reid also in that same interview, John, he said that Patrick Mahomes' ankle is fine. I've had a couple of people here and there asking about Mahomes' ankle when people want to talk Chiefs in person, whether it be friends or friends of friends and whatnot. And I'm like, I don't know what everyone's, maybe they're getting confused with turf toe. You don't need a surgery, typically speaking, right, for a high ankle sprain. He did have the corrective surgery for the turf toe, and so I think there was a lingering feeling that maybe he would have to have some kind of surgery and be limited this offseason. But I think it's just simple rehab. Like, that's a big time thing. So I don't think he dove right into what would be his usual offseason. But by the time the OTAs and those type of things start, John, I tend to think he's going to be 100% fully ready to go with this particular injury.
Well, I 100% agree that he'll be 100% ready. I mean, you know, you're right. This isn't something that's going to require surgery. It's just going to require him not playing football for a little while, which isn't an option during the season. When he has an ankle sprain, he's got to continue to play.
Especially during the NFL playoffs, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I think there's a misconception, too. I think people forget that he had it the whole playoffs. I think people thought it was in the AFC title game, but this is actually something that he dealt with against Jacksonville. It happened very early in the Chiefs playoffs, and then he had to deal with it. So there was no improvement of the ankle. It was more managing. And then that clock, you know, whether it be 6 to 8 weeks, starts probably after the Super Bowl. So, you know, we're about there now, you know, at this stage. I think he'll be ready to do Camp Pat. I got to imagine this is a repeat of Camp Pat coming up here in April. when the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, they try to do as much as possible where they can, you know, just repeat exactly what they did the previous year. And so I tend to think that's upcoming, and I think he'll be good to go. I meant to put this in the rundown, and I clearly forgot, John, but Patrick Mahomes took exception to the Roger Goodell decision. This was late yesterday. Wrote it up for us this morning. The NFL decided at these owners meetings this week in Phoenix to allow teams to have more than one Thursday night football game. I've seen different headlines and whatnot that they could have up to three if it ends up being flexible, but certainly more than one. And Patrick Mahomes, with the emoji seen around the NFL world, hits Roger Goodell, the commish, with the facepalm emoji, which is never a good sign. If you're in a relationship and you get the facepalm emoji, you are not in for a good day. So that is as damning as it comes when it comes to emojis. And Roger Goodell, and this is a sign of the times, right? He felt the need, after he's questioned about it, to respond to the emoji of the number one player in the game, saying, "I don't think we're putting Amazon, which owns the rights to Thursday Night Football, over our players. The data doesn't show a higher injury rate. I hear from players who also love the 10 days after a Thursday night game. We have to try to balance all of it." Unfortunately for Mahomes, and I think he does truly possess a lot of say in the Chiefs organization and the NFL, this is a money thing, and it's money and business over anything and everything in this league. I could see the NFL curbing this flex idea where suddenly in 15 days time, you're going to be on short rest with no previous notice. But them going back on these big time teams, premier teams, like the teams with stars in Cincinnati and Kansas City, like these big time teams that have the big markets like Philadelphia, New York, California. I think you're going to see them booked ahead of time for the two Thursday night games. I think that's very real and not coming back, John.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we're going to have flex scheduling for Monday Night Football this year, which has not been the case in previous years. And it may be that the correct way to handle this is to do the flex scheduling for Sunday night and Monday night, but not do it on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, you'd still have the ability to move those big games around. That means that they're going to have to concentrate getting more good matchups up front in the Thursday night games. And so I think that's why they have decided to change the rules about how many times a team can be in there. I was just looking for it. I saw something. I saw a quote about that. Here it is. This is the NFL media and business officer Brian Rolapp, who said this yesterday. "We want to make sure that teams competitively play their way into prime time." Well, now that says to me, they're saying we want to get good teams in the Thursday night games. And so without the flex, they're going to have to do it up front somehow.
Flex. I wrote this last week, but flexing the Chiefs into Thursday night football and any team, right, is bad for health and safety, but it's a competitive disadvantage to the teams that have built better rosters, because suddenly they're playing on two Thursday nights. You know, they find out 2 weeks ahead of time, hey, by the way, it's going to be short rest. And yes, I know that leads into a bigger break, which is what Roger Goodell was referencing. But why should the best teams in the league have to play on short rest twice, especially when it's so random whether or not that game is on the road? People don't realize how much of a big disadvantage and even a boosted disadvantage it is when the team is traveling, because you're losing prep time as well. So I was, again, that this was my take on it. This was before the facepalm scene around the NFL world, that I was not in favor of this, especially in Kansas City, because it wouldn't be fair. And now you're having a Chiefs team. Remember the days when we used to beg for the Kansas City Chiefs to be on primetime? You have a Chiefs team that's certainly going to be booked for five, which is the pre-booking max. And then now they can have potential to be flexed into two more. And whether that be Monday night, you have days changing, not to mention the nightmare that it is for the travel secretary of all these teams. You're booking hotels for 5-day blocks for 100 people. The NFL is not... in this particular situation, and I guess there's a lot of particular situations, the NFL is not thinking about anything but the bottom line and making sure that Amazon feels like paying $1 billion for Thursday Night Football was worth it per year. And we'll see how it plays out. I do think the flex to Thursday is going to have too much pushback, but this idea of the pre-scheduling of a team for multiple Thursday night games is going to be there. And this is already a Kansas City Chiefs team who is expected to go to Germany. So if you thought the schedule was getting easier, this will be a tough road, yeah, both team-wise and logistically heading into what would be 2023. John, Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce are doing a show in Kansas City the Wednesday night before the NFL draft, New Heights Live, and they are excited about this. I'm looking into seeing if we could cover this for Arrowhead Pride. I've been talking to them. I'm not that they need any publicity at this stage. They are one of the top podcasts.
Yeah.
Across podcasts in general. If you go to even just to the top, I believe they're in the top 50. If you just go to just podcasts, it's even more so than, and then certainly at the top of football. In the last New Heights, Travis Kelce had some interesting words when it came to Orlando Brown Jr., who of course went to the Cincinnati Bengals after talks failed with the Chiefs. This is what Travis said. It hurts my soul. It's like watching your best friend turn evil on you. The past 2 years, we've been struggling to beat the Bengals, so there's been a lot of buildup emotion. And I would say not necessarily hate, but he dislikes the Bengals because they kept beating us and talking about it every time. So it's like, man, to see you go to the dark side, it's an awkward feeling. And then Travis went on to say, he hopes OBJ has a Hall of Fame career, which nothing for the best, and they got great memories, but and this is how he put it, John, this rivalry is on and popping at this stage. So some true words, I think, some honest words from Travis Kelce. And as you know, this is what I always say, the more WWE, the better. So I hope he doubles down the week they play the Bengals and we get more of this talk as OBJ starts a new chapter with the Cincinnati Bengals trying to knock the Chiefs off in the playoffs.
Well, I'm just now imagining someone throwing a chair on the stage of the music hall during the New Heights Live. See,
they should be planning that, really. you know, Ric Flair always said, wrestling isn't fake, it's choreographed. And why not choreograph a chair shot for New Heights Live in Kansas City?
I'll tell you something that probably not everybody knows, because I have done gigs in the music hall, haven't done one for a long time, but they have an elevator there that you can actually put a car on. So it would be possible to have some kind of a WWE stunt where a car drives onto the stage of the music hall. So I'm just going to put that out there as a thought of something weird.
I'm not
that
sure
can
how
happen
we
during this podcast.
Yeah, I'm not sure how we can wire that information to the Kelce group, but I'm gonna do my best to find a way, I think, to make sure that they know that that's possible. Speaking of tight ends, lesser known tight ends, except for here in Kansas City and maybe Oklahoma, Blake Bell back with the Chiefs on a 1 year deal. I tend to think so long as the Chiefs don't draft a tight end, which is possible, I think, in this particular draft. You should have the same room that we've been used to these past couple of years now with Kelce and Gray and Fortson and now Bell. I know that Andy Reid has liked to have that four tight end group on the table. It's been thwarted a couple of years in a row here where you had the Fortson injury and then now it's the three man team. And then all of a sudden Bell is not ready last year. And so I think they try to give this four tight end room another go. Noah Gray really stepped up last year as far as the blocking in this whole thing goes. Blake Bell has been the best blocking tight end on the team for a couple of years, besides that hiatus year that he had in Dallas after the first Super Bowl win. But that's kind of how I see this going. And to me, it's a why not deal for the Chiefs. Only thing is, if they were to draft a tight end, I think this could be an interesting scenario when it comes down to the single cut down day, John. Forget about the single cut down day that we have this year.
Yeah, you know, I think that analysis would be spot on at this time a year ago. But I'm not so sure that it's spot on this year, and that's because there are so many good tight ends in the draft.
Yeah.
I think it's possible that the Chiefs might grab one of these guys, maybe not a first round guy, but there could be some guys that they really like later in the draft. So I'm viewing Blake Bell as a placeholder. You know, we always talk about the Chiefs making sure they have enough guys that can go out and play a game tomorrow if they had to, so they can go into the draft and truly get best player available. I think that Blake Bell needs to be worried about a guy that's being drafted and taking his place.
You're ready to hand Blake Bell the 2023 Ronald Jones Award. Good luck keeping your job when we sign Jerick McKinnon and or draft a stud tight end in the seventh round out of Rutgers. It tells you he's going to take your job, and he does by week eight. Look out. I think very possible. Yeah. I think it's, you know, that back end in the room is something to watch. Certainly tight end is not a problem for the Chiefs. I think Noah Gray is hiding in plain sight as someone ready to break out. He's just in it. And, you know, talk about shadows in the wide receiver room. That is a colossal shadow behind Travis Kelce in the tight end room. And look, he's getting older at some point, right?
Right.
Doesn't seem like it's going to be anytime soon. So how does that play into how the trajectory of Noah Gray's career goes? We'll see how that ends up playing out as we go here. So Blake Bell back with the Chiefs on the 1 year deal. The Chiefs signed two defensive tackles, a 2019 fifth rounder in Byron Cowart and a 2021 seventh rounder in Phil Hoskins. Hoskins had actually been here on the practice squad, and if I'm not mistaken, we'll get a ring out of it, even though he really didn't have much to do. But when you're on the roster, you're on the roster. When it comes to Cowart, who's a new face, this was the analysis from Ron Kopp in our film review as far as the synopsis goes. Before New England placed him on the reserve PUP list in 2021, Cowart was an ascending player who was continuing to develop in a position he had not played before. He was waived before he could be bounced back. And the timing of that move may have impacted how effective he could be with Indianapolis in 2022. If Cowart can get back on the role he was starting to build in New England, he should be a legitimate competitor to become Kansas City's starting DT, the position that Derek Nnadi has occupied in recent seasons. In 2020, Cowart was as stout as Nnadi looked in 2022, but against the run and the pass, and he might even have a higher ceiling as an overall playmaker. Either way, this is Rhett Veach building depth in that room, and that's what I see it as. I'm not going to tell you that I think this guy's going to come out of the woodwork and earn the starting position necessarily, but in recent years, we have seen Brett Veach. 1 year, it's, you know, that running back position, which we just talked about. Maybe it's another year where he just has a million wide receivers. He picks a position each year where he says, we're going to throw 15 names at this position. Mm-hmm. And guess what? By the end of training camp, we're going to like a couple of these guys. And I think these are two moves. This is an effort to make a nice, big, meaty competition at DT. And that way, maybe you don't have to necessarily spend a draft pick on that. You feel like you might have enough there. And plus, you do have the luxury of having the best defensive tackle in the league and Chris Jones leading that room. And so, in a way, I think anyone in that position, so long as they're a good run stuffer, is going to meet the criteria for what you need.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I'm not really clear on what they expect out of Derek Nnadi this year. And so that's the only question mark that I would put on this. He's on a veteran salary benefit deal, so he could be just as expendable as the next guy. Although I was his guaranteed, I have lost track of some of these VSB deals because now we're starting to see some of them be fully guaranteed contracts, and I've forgotten if his was one of them. But I agree. They're going to throw some people at this.
Looking it up for Nnadi right here, it is one million guaranteed. Yes.
Okay, so he has a better chance of being there. When
but you made a good point last podcast, John, about the Jermaine Carter, mm-hmm. the Jermaine yep. Carter asterisk. New York came out a little bit there. And where the Chiefs, they're in that position right here where it's championship over everything. So just because someone is guaranteed X amount of money, they may say, enjoy your money. But
right, right, right. Sure. Right. No, I agree. But it is, you know, part of the equation, you know, and it might not be enough for them to say, we have to keep this guy, but it is, going to matter because they're so tied up against the cap with, you know, Patrick Mahomes' contract as part of the equation and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to play out. I think Naughty, because he has the guaranteed contract, even if it's a low-cost VSB deal, is going to have a little bit of an edge, but not a big one. It's not like they're paying him, you know, $5 million. And this will be a very interesting thing to watch. And I'm kind of interested to see what we get out of Phil Hoskins. This is, you know, a guy that we just know nothing about.
Right.
He was on the team for on the practice squad for 3 or 4 weeks, I think, most of it in the postseason. So we know nothing about this guy. And it
typically
could be
when the Chiefs try to get these guys on those reserve future deals, they liked him pre-draft, or someone in the room did, and they say to themselves, well, let's get him with our coaches and see what happens. So it's a name worth remembering. I don't know if he's going to end up making the 53, but we shall see. George Karlaftis this week was spotted working with Tamba Ali, I presume in Kansas City, doing some hand fighting. I don't really have a ton to say here. I think that's a very cool thing to see former players, especially someone as popular as Tamba Ali, working with George Karlaftis. I mean, I don't know how much it's going to lead to him having more than, what did he have, 6 sacks, 5.5 in the last 7 games. But it's just a very cool moment to see on social media. We threw it up there at Arrowhead Pride.
Well, I think the thing that people are excited about here is that Tamba Ali always had a big chunk of his effectiveness in his hand fighting, because he took classes in karate or some kind of, I'm not sure.
Jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah. He took the classes to become an expert in this Oriental field of self-defense to improve his hand fighting. And I think that's why people are excited about this, is they feel that Karlaftis could help him a lot. And I think that's an excellent point. You know, Karlaftis isn't coming into this thing with a lot on his list of achievements other than a really good motor. So any help that Ali can give him, I think, will make him a better player, and I'm all for it.
Do you think he has 10 sacks in 2023?
I think it's possible. It's not that big of a reach to go from 6 to 10, particularly if this really helps him.
Yeah, I think the key there was 5.5 in the last 7 games, right? So now this new version of Karlaftis, who also got a sack in the AFC title game, you know, you have a whole season of him. It seems reasonable. So as we talk about former players, and shout out to our pal, the Brit Chief, Brad S, the Legion of Zoom, which he of course owns the British patent to, which is incredible, an incredible story. It's dead. Everybody that was on the quote unquote Legion of Zoom in the wide receiver room is now elsewhere. Tyreek Hill is in Miami. Mecole Hardman is with the New York Jets. DeMarcus Robinson, most recently with the Baltimore Ravens. Sammy Watkins, a free agent. Byron Pringle in Chicago. And so that
a free agent now too.
Right. He also played with Chicago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that old Legion of Zoom is no more, John. Do you have any parting words for the Legion of Zoom?
No, I'm just glad I won't have to point out that Seattle didn't invent the Legion of Boom, that it came from something else. I'm tired of making that point. So,
yeah, I think it's a key part of the Patrick Mahomes story, where they started with a really high powered offense, where it was built on the idea of the Chiefs chucking the ball down the field, and that threat teams adjusted by making sure that they never beat the last man, the NFL version of parking the bus in a way. And then they adjusted and changed their offense altogether and won another Super Bowl. And so, you know, you talk about Mecole Hardman, the Legion of Zoom was really over halfway through the year. He wasn't able to play half the year because of that whole abdomen thing. And then he only was able to play in the one playoff game, limited, and then not even in the Super Bowl anyway. And the Chiefs made a living in the second half off of working in a possession receiver in Juju Smith-Schuster's, you know, pounding Smith-Schuster which was very different from the Legion of Zoom. So it was just the first chapter in a long book of Patrick Mahomes. It's a little bit sad to think about, because I think when it was happening, you're like, this is going to be great forever, and this is going to be this great offense. And but sort of a one-year wonder in a way. And now the Chiefs are moving on to, I think, building a more balanced offense to me.
Well, that's because the NFL stands for not for long. And we keep getting a reminder of this every year, that this stuff just doesn't last very long.
That's right. That's right. Speaking of NFL not for long, Odell Beckham Jr., who we mentioned earlier, did not even play last year because of an injury in the Super Bowl, and still looking for a team. We already discussed that the Chiefs, I think, remain interested, but it'll only be for their price. I don't think we need to continue to build upon that story. So with that being said, we're going to take our break. When we come back, we are going to pick the brain, the beautiful brain of my esteemed deputy editor, John Dixon, as he explains the contracts for Mike Edwards and Drew Tranquil. And we get into our flash poll. Stay with us right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, John, you know, I know your last name is Dixon, but it should be Nash, because you have a beautiful mind and you get these contracts in some ways that I don't a lot of the time, and you're able to explain them to me. So let's get into the contracts for Mike Edwards and Drew Tranquil. And as is typical in the Brett Veach era, right, these things are a little bit more affordable than people realize, and that's a good thing for Kansas City.
Yeah, we knew right away. These contracts are both very similar, just for starters. We knew right away that they would have a maximum value of $5 million and around $3 million in cap hit, and also happening to be cash, because the these are one-year contracts in the opening season. And so they do this in both cases with a base salary that's right around the minimum, just over $1 million, and then a signing bonus that's around $1.4 million, and then basically per-game bonuses that add up to around $500,000. Now, in Edwards' case, this per-game roster bonus gets into the likely-to-be-earned or not-likely-to-be-earned calculation, because he only appeared in, I think it was 11 games. Maybe it was 12 games. No, I thought it was 13 games. Sorry.
Okay.
It was 13 games last season. So his roster bonus that counts against the cap only is the amount of money times 13 games. The rest of it, if it's earned, if he was to play in all 17 games this season, for example, the remainder of that money would count against next year's cap. Now, in Tranquil's case, the whole amount counts against the cap this year, because he played in all 17 games for the Chargers last year. So as usual, they do a really nice job of figuring this out, so it doesn't cost the Chiefs a whole lot of money. Both of them have cap hits just under right around $3 million in the coming season. And both of them should be more than worth that amount of money based on what we know about them so far.
Yeah, Tranquil led the Chargers in tackles. So to me, getting an affordable deal is such a win. And then you need to load up on that safety room with some depth pieces. And Mike Edwards could be more than that. I know that we've been talking about his ball hawk ability. And so to get those players in affordable deals, good job by Brett Veach, as per usual, you know, at this stage of the game. And again, I think it plays into the theme of what we were talking about earlier, and the fact that you're going to play ball with the Chiefs or not be on a team with Patrick Mahomes. And the Chiefs know that they have that advantage. Again, I know that people are trying to yearn here for a wide receiver, but you know, at a certain time and place, it's like, okay, do you want to have a chance to win the Super Bowl? Cause you can do it here. And you know, quite obviously these contracts made sense to the players for more than one reason. I'm sure there was a little bit of a Kansas City advantage built into that. JD, we have some rule changes that happened. You did this article for us at arrowheadpride.com. So some changes ahead of the 2023 NFL season. As you look through the rule changes, what stood out to you?
Well, most of these are about small things, just making the rules a little more consistent. Most of the rules proposed by the competition committee were along those lines. An example of this is making the penalty for illegal punts or drop kicks consistent with other illegal acts. In other words, the penalty for this is going to be the same as it is for these other illegal things that happen in the game. And there's like four or five of those where it's just about, making the rules more consistent. The competition committee proposed two rules that were kind of controversial. One of them would have moved punt touchbacks to the 25-yard line. That one was voted down. And then the other one, which I think is very strange, said that on a kickoff, if it's fair caught behind the 25-yard line, it comes out to the 25-yard line. Now, that one was not voted down. It was tabled. And the word now is that when the league meets again, they may pass that for next year. But for the moment, that rule is not going to and be enforced in 2023. Now, the teams put forth a few rules, and a few of those were passed. These tend to be a little more controversial than what the competition committee will do. The Eagles wanted to allow players to have the jersey number zero. But the league said, fine, that's fine. In fact, I think it was nearly unanimous, the vote for that one. The Chargers had a procedural thing about adjusting the play clock after an instant replay, make that consistent with how other things are timed. That's another one of those making things consistent thing. And then the only one that involved replay that was approved was by the Texans, expanding the replay's jurisdiction to failed fourth down attempts. Now, in other words, if you fail on fourth down, the review officials up in the booth can decide to review that. The coach doesn't have to throw a flag. And I think this is actually a good rule because, a fourth down conversion that fails is sometimes something that coaches have to throw a red flag on. And I think it's fine for the league to do some of those, even though the coach doesn't have a flag to do it. So I'm for that one. I think that's a good step forward, but the teams had several other rules that involved expanding instant replay. And there were several of those, none of them made it. And of course the really weird one was from the Eagles, an alternate onside kick rule where you get a fourth and 20 from your own 20-yard line.
We've seen
and that one that was set aside too.
We've seen that be interesting in the XFL and leagues like that, mm-hmm. where they rather than having the onside kick, they will allow you to do a fourth and long attempt. And going into what we were just talking about, to me, that'll be a huge advantage for certain teams who aren't like a run first team and are built. Mm-hmm. I think it's just too much of a competitive disadvantage for teams built in certain ways. So I don't think that's ever going to happen in the NFL. Now, with that being said, I saw this interesting nugget that they want onside recoveries to go from about 4% to 14 or 15%. And so they want to find other ways to do that, all in an effort to make the game more exciting, right? Mm-hmm, like if your team is down 10 in your second Thursday night football game of the year, you know, you're so tired, but you're trying to still win the game. And rather than there being such a minimal chance of you somehow getting back in the game, they want to improve that to about 1 out of 10, which to me makes sense, but I don't know how exactly you do that. So we'll see if there are any changes as we go. Sometimes what they'll do is do in the preseason these trial runs of certain rules. So that's always something to monitor as well. I think the biggest rule change is the one you glossed over a little bit there, John, from the Texans with the fourth down. I don't think teams should have to challenge such a crucial down when they're going for it on fourth down. And I like that that'll now be reviewed by the officials automatically, similar to what you would see on, what is it, turnovers?
Mm-hmm. And touchdowns. And scoring plays, yeah.
And scoring plays where you don't have to burn a challenge. And I know that there had been other talks about maybe expanding the challenge rule. That didn't happen. Number zero, I think every team is going to have a zero. I think this is going to be very interesting to players. Do you have a pick, John, of who we might see as Kansas City's number zero?
Well, I think that anyone whose name starts with O is
you think?
You know, Dorian O'Daniel, if he were still on the team, that he'd
be Orlando Brown.
Right, Jr. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's a rule, though, if you change your jersey, you know, for the next year, I believe you have to buy out the other jerseys in the like, it's not just as simple as you saying, yeah. I believe there's like an NFL merch rule. So it would have to be a player who would want it so bad that he might be willing to do that. I'm going to go out on a limb here, John.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost a bold prediction, but I don't care. I'm going with Justin Ross for number zero in Kansas City, because I don't think there are enough Justin Ross 8 jerseys out there where it's going to be a deal where he's going to have to pay too much money or anything like that. And I think it's a player that has a lot of attention. I think he probably has the quote unquote swag to do it. You need to, you know, I know that Calvin Ridley has done it in Jacksonville. Yeah. And so I'm going to go Justin Ross here. We'll see if I'm correct or not in that sense.
I would just be happy if Justin Ross's playing time was greater than zero this season. I'd be worried that would be that put some bad juju on his season, the zero jersey. But I think you're making a good point. I could see how he would be someone who would want to do that. I think you're making a good choice. I just hope it doesn't portend something, I guess.
You know, I really believe it, because the last thing I wanted to do was remind fans that Justin Ross exists, because then we're going to get more comments and tweets about him. I mean, he looked terrible last year. I've said that a number of times on the podcast. So maybe I know that there's a workout video of him recently running up a hill. Yeah. Maybe he looked better this year. But even before he got injured last year, I did not see it. But look, he's had a year of seasoning, right? The meat is always better. The takeaways are always better after they're marinated, and we'll see if Justin Ross can do something in training camp this year and prove last year's version of me wrong. That was a pretty big doubter. I mean,
that would be fantastic if it does. I mean, there's no question about that. So
yeah, I mean, maybe he's a podcast listener and is going to show up with zero and give me a point or something, and then I'm going to have to root for him. You know, maybe that'll be the case. All right, let's get into our last story here. This was more an article I just wanted to bring to people's attention that I thought was really good by Jared, who just continues to put up good stuff at AP. When it comes to the panic of this year's offseason, I'm going to read an excerpt from his article that we have up there right now. Wait, I want to get the title of it so I can recommend it to you wonderful listeners. In past two offseasons, Chiefs Brett Veach made the right calls. So I recommend that you go and read the whole thing, but I like this part. At this point, 2 years ago, Kansas City did not have a left tackle signed, even though the team was coming off an all-time horrific offensive line performance in Super Bowl 55. As one free agent option after another became unavailable, panic set in among fans and media. The Chiefs were even urged to sign 11-year veteran Russell Okung, who had missed 19 games over the previous two seasons to fill its need. There was speculation that key acquisition Joe Tooney, considered among the league's best guards, would switch to tackle. And then, as we got closer to draft weekend, we saw the big-time splash trade for Orlando Brown. Now, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee that the Chiefs are going to make a stunning trade for a wide receiver. And, you know, I do still think they're connected to Odell. I can't wrap my head around the money of DeAndre Hopkins, which is why I think less about that right now. But to simply think here on March 29th that Brett Veach is going to like leave the wide receiver room alone and not have a grander plan, I just think it's a little silly. And look, we got 160 and change days until opening night, and yes, it's boring right now, and it would be fun if the Chiefs had a splash signing or a splash trade like they were able to do for Orlando Brown. But I think Brett Veach deserves the benefit of the doubt here. Like, what are we doing? We just had panic last year. We just had panic the previous year, right? They went to the AFC title game and then won the Super Bowl again. I think it's hard to preach patience, right? Because I get it.
Right.
But I'm telling you, when we get to training camp, there will be another receiver there, whether it be a veteran that you're not thinking of, maybe that's available on the team, a veteran like Odell that they sign, or maybe a premium draft pick where you're saying, okay, there's going to be another youth movement here in the wide receiver room.
Yeah, I also thought this was a terrific article. Another example of the great pieces that Jared has brought to the table on Arrowhead Pride. And we really appreciate Jared since he's joined us. And this is a good example of why we do. I think one of the interesting points that he made was that we pay attention to these top 30 visits and say, okay, well, the Chiefs are likely to get this guy because they had him in for a top 30 visit. Or we take the opposite approach that this guy is coming in as a way to deceive other teams that the Chiefs are interested. And what Jared was saying in part here is that the Chiefs used those visits to examine what the depth of the cornerback was in the draft last year specifically, knowing because they talked to all these guys that were at the back end of the draft that they could get a lot of good cornerbacks, meaning that they didn't have to do anything in free agency. It helps them decide, in other words, what they're going to do, where they're going to go to get particular kinds of players. I've seen over the last couple of days some tweets from Kevin Cole, I think his name is, who's an analyst for does some NFL analysis on Twitter, where he does a lot of things about, you know, whether it's wiser to get certain positions in free agency or in the draft. And I think that's fine that people want to look at that kind of stuff. But it always comes down to which players are available at those positions right now. And I think that's an underrated part of what people bring to these discussions, is that it's not so much about, what the history has been of defensive ends in the draft or cornerbacks or any other position. It's about which ones are available right now. And that's what a GM is really going to be looking at. Which is the guy I really want to have on my team, and can I afford to get him? You know, is there a way to make that happen? That's what all these interviews are about. And I think that's one of the things that Jared hit on here.
Yeah, and I made our flash poll sort of in reference and connection with this point of how real is the panic? And because it's confusing, right? Because if you go to Chiefs Twitter, it's like that meme of the fire dog with the dog in the room and the flames.
Oh, right, yeah. Everything's fine. Yeah.
Everything's fine. And you would think like, okay, this is really bad. And so my question this morning to Chiefs fans, and we had more than 1700 Chiefs fans weigh in. So that's usually a pretty good barometer of how the whole fan base is feeling. How satisfied have you been with the Chiefs offseason to date? Now, John, what would Twitter tell you here or comments?
Oh, I would say on Twitter that maybe one third is satisfied with what the Chiefs have done so far.
This is the squeaky wheel theory that you always have to keep in mind as we talk about panic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
61% of fans are satisfied.
Wow.
So
okay.
To me, what that is telling you is there's only a certain amount of fans who are dissatisfied. Now, it's not small, 30%. So you're looking at about two thirds that are satisfied. And then there was another 6%, John, that were very satisfied. So you add 61 and 6%.
Yeah. That's right at two thirds. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quick math. 67.1. Yeah. Look at me. I'm on a roll here. 67.2. Say I got too excited. 67.2. So that's two thirds of the fan base that are fine and that are happy. Of the unsatisfied, only 30.8% say they're just unsatisfied. And then what you would think would be a grand majority of fans, John, based upon some of the comments and how crazy it's been and the reaction is, 2.1% are considering themselves very unsatisfied. So when you go on Chiefs Twitter or in our wonderful comments section, Arrowhead Pride, and you say, man, why is our entire fan base so upset? They're not. Most fans are fine right now, right? Most fans are fine right now. And that's just a good reminder using the wonderful Twitter poll tool to show you that, yes, I think a lot of fans would like to see more. We noted 30%, 32% not satisfied, but the majority of fans are like, okay, we do actually trust in Beach. It's just you don't see a lot of people that are so satisfied that they're running to Twitter and saying, shut up. No, we're fine. You have a couple that are willing to do that, but more times than not, you see people that want to complain more apt to leave comments. So just so everyone realizes, okay, I think everyone you know, we should give the I think the entire fan base more credit for breathing a little bit, because I think it's worth noting there. All right, so
I'm guilty of that, so I'll own to that. Sometimes I don't give them enough credit to the fan base, so I'll own up to that.
It's just like when you go to leave reviews on things. How often are you like, I need to go back onto that website and tell them that is the best item X that I've ever had? No, it's like, I paid for this. You bet your ass I'm running to the computer and I'm going to talk about it. So a good reminder that, look, we are, I think, keeping everything in perspective for the most part here. All right. Well, that is an Arrowhead Pride editor show. I didn't think we'd get through an hour of content. I didn't think we had enough, but me and John very clearly like to yap. So we were able to get you an hour of content today. Thank you to Steve Serta behind the scenes, who always does a great job for us. Keep it locked in at arrowheadpride.com. Keep it locked in on our podcast network as we gear up for the NFL draft in about a month's time. John, right here in Kansas City, we'll be keeping the content coming. So again, thank you to Steve. Thank you to John. If you like our podcast network, please go on to Apple iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review. Remember, if you can go look at it now, if you read a 5-star, you can, and you leave a 1-star, you can see which one gets read here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. So make sure we're leaving those 5-star reviews. My book is out, as I told you guys, every show, A Dynasty Begins. That link is at twitter.com/BGSween. You can also get it on Amazon and out in Kansas City at all different kinds of spots, including Rally House, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, et cetera. And that's it. That's it for the Editor Show. We will be back with you if there is breaking Chiefs news, with an emergency podcast as we go here. Until then, or until next time, for John Dixon, Steve Serta, I'm Pete Sweeney. Thank you for joining us on another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show.